Well, the fifth dimension. You're listening to PRN.FM. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. We had a little technical issue that was on my end. We had a major brownout or some kind of thing going on. didn't even allow us to see the game. And they're trying to patch things up in our area here, so hopefully we are live and being heard. So no further wasting of time. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's get the discussion moving. We've had quite a bit of discussion this week about the massacre in Orlando and related issues. Your thoughts about that and about anything else. This is your forum, and it's time to free your mind. 888-874-4888. So let's talk to Dave from Brooklyn. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
How are you, Leutrice?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
What's on your mind today that you're freeing your mind of?
I can't talk about the Orlando deal. That's too disheartening. So, I'd like to start talking about our presidential candidates, if you want to call them
okay.
that. One's impending indictment, which may not happen because she has his friends in high places, and the other one's completely unqualified. How many times has he gone bankrupt, filed for Chapter 11, that's going to be a president? I think she was selected, and she's going to be the president. Anyway, I don't want to deal with that either. We have very high technology, which I've seen out my window recently. There were these three lights, two white lights in front, one red taillight, and all of a sudden, the red taillight, without stopping, started moving the other way, the opposite direction. You think that's high technology or what? Have you ever heard of
something
like that?
I don't know. I'm relying on how you interpret. You saw it. How do you interpret what you saw?
We have higher technology than anybody even thinks of. As I told you, this taillight, I thought it was one vehicle.
Hmm.
And the red light just separated without stopping and went the other direction.
Well, people have been reporting for years a number of anomalies that they see, including things that they can't easily explain, crossing the sky's pathways, and we don't know what to make of them. But I agree with you. There is some technology out there that we don't yet appreciate or understand.
They don't want us to know.
And we just have to keep ourselves locked in and figure out what it is that we are seeing. We may know something in the not-too-distant future. Thanks for getting us started today, Dave. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Good to hear from you.
Harvey from Berkeley here.
Hello, Harvey. You're next. But,
hi. Well, I'm going to talk about the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant again because unfortunately, the federal government just lifted a moratorium on 19 offshore fracking platforms in the Santa Barbara Channel off of California. And the problem is that offshore hydraulic fracking in the Santa Barbara Channel can trigger a meltdown at the aging Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. It turns out that the power plant is... there's a fault line called the Hawes-Gary fault line that travels through the Santa Barbara Channel, and the Hawes-Gary fault line is connected to the Shoreline fault line, which is connected to the Diablo Cove fault line, which runs right underneath reactor number one at the Diablo Cove nuclear power plant. So fracking in the Santa Barbara Channel can actually trigger a nuclear meltdown at the Diablo Canyon. And we know that the megathrust earth magnitude 9 offshore earthquake and tsunami caused the deadly Fukushima nuclear catastrophe, so it could happen here again in California. And I'm calling on your vast audience, especially people who live in California, to go to the California State Lands Commission website. That's California State Lands Commission website. Click on the contact button and send an email to the California State Lands Commissioners calling for a full environmental review of PG&E's Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant before they grant a 10-year extension of permits, because nuclear meltdown in California. As I mentioned before, the nuclear plant sits in front of the California Central Growing Valley, and the radioactive materials will go back into the California Growing Valley, where 25% of America's food comes from, and plus the water that flows off the Sierra Mountains through the Central Valley into cities like L.A. and San Francisco would be irradiated. So both the food and the water would be irradiated if there was a nuclear meltdown at the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. So this is vitally important to all Americans to once again go to the California State Lands Commission website, click on contact, and send an email to the commissioners telling them that you want a full environmental review of Pacific Gas and Electric's Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant before they grant a 10-year extension of permits.
Okay, thanks, Harvey, for bringing us up to date on that. I see you still have a problem with wildfires in California. Hello, Joel. You're on the air.
Hi, you, Teresa. How's your week been?
So far, so good.
Good to hear. I'd like to talk a little bit about the possible Clinton response to Russia when she gets elected, if she gets elected. I think she will. And why it's so dangerous. As I think all of us know, the U.S.-NATO push eastward really continues rather relentlessly and perilously. And the geopolitical struggle for leverage between the two leading nuclear powers deepens. And Washington justifies its aggressive position on what I think is a bogus claim that Russia is hell-bent on restoring the Soviet Empire, some portion of it. And Putin is rendered by so many, including Hillary, as the new Hitler by the usual cast of foreign policy elites. So an inescapable question really arises. What might she do once, as is likely, she enters the White House in less than a year? And no one knows for sure. But any thought that Hillary might take a softer line on Russia, indeed on any foreign policy issue, should be quickly jettisoned. And aside from, you know, the standard cliches and a few peripheral marks, this topic has scarcely been taken up by either the Democratic or Republican presidential aspirants. I've sacrificed some of my sanity and watched CNN and MSNBC get some election coverage. It's never come up. But we do know that the Clintonites are basically neoconservatives, anxious to spread their doctrine of neoliberal capitalism far and wide. And we know further that Hillary has championed wars in Afghanistan, in Iraq, Libya, Syria, not to mention the Balkans many years ago when Bill was calling shots, and Hillary was voicing zealous, hawkish support. And recently, during the campaign, and even before, she has called on Europeans to stand up to terrible Russian bullying, as she calls it, adding that even harsher economic sanctions are not enough. She is a champion of the Pentagon, of the security state, of Wall Street, of the Council on Foreign Relations, although she's not a member. Her daughter, interestingly enough, is the member. She's a champion, as we all know, of the Israel lobby. She wants Europeans to break their fatal dependence on Russian energy sources. That's one of the real reasons, besides the desire to loot the Ukraine of everything it has, of American policy in the Ukraine. At the same time, she wants the Europeans to free themselves, to adopt a harder line against Russia. And oddly, it's the American crazy Donald Trump who's called, vaguely to be sure, for some kind of collaborative rapport with the Russians in order to combat ISIS. And one other thing, for the record, there was no seizure, military or otherwise, of Crimea. The local Russian population voted overwhelmingly to join the Federation, nor is there even credible evidence that Putin had his sights set on the Baltic states or any other region of Europe, including the Ukraine. And Hillary has constantly said, she said it a number of times, that the way that Russia is trying to move the boundaries of post-World War II Europe, et cetera, World War II, at that time, Crimea was a part of Russia. In fact, Crimea has been a part of Russia longer than California has been a part of the United States. So Putin's aggression clearly has little to do with moving boundaries. And a lot of this information, by the way, can be found in Diane Johnstone's great book, Queen of Chaos. where you can read about it in great depth. And it seems, finally, that she is proceeding squarely in the tracks of her husband's Balkan crusade. There should be no mistake. Hillary is the preferred candidate of the American war machine, which remains grateful of how Bill worked so diligently in the 90s to expand U.S. global power under the guise of humanitarian intervention. And this is a veneer that has been invoked by such neoliberal imperialists as Madeleine Albright, George Soros, Tony Blair, and George W. Bush, as well as the Clintons. And so with Hillary in the White House, a military action can be expected to arrive beneath the facade of delivering human rights and similar benefits to targeted victims. And on this point, at least, one wonders whether or not the Benito Mussolini of the Republicans could provide more political wisdom than Margaret Thatcher of the Democrats.
Well, here's the thing. In both cases, whether it's Trump or Clinton, there's big trouble ahead, and people are very uneasy. They happen to be, although in the lead right now, they also happen to be the most unpopular people. People just don't like them. The polls are devastating when it comes to both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And the parties, the respective parties, the duopoly is trying to figure out what to do come convention time next month, how best to position these unlikable individuals so that they nonetheless win. What do you see as the outcome here come, let's say, convention time? Well, and foreign policy is going to be such an important part of what makes a candidate appealing. What do they have to sell? What are they? We know what Trump is selling. He's been very clear about it. Hillary Clinton, less so, except that she insists, and as she did with early on in the Obama administration, about smart diplomacy. Diplomacy was pretty stupid until she came along. So what do you see as the selling point, and why are we not hearing from you-know-who, Mr. Sanders, about this, who could still temper the foreign policy objectives of Hillary Clinton?
Oh, that's a very key question that you asked. As far as Sanders is concerned, he has always been an empire man. And it's a strange juxtaposition to call yourself a socialist when at the same time you support empire, because empire is imperialism. Imperialism is based on militarism, extreme nationalism, and racism. Hard to call yourself a socialist when you're associated with that. However, he was just a relatively obscure politician that those of us in Vacation Vermont know about and Vermonters know about. But once he decided to run for high office, he really got beyond himself because he depended upon a constituency that in many ways was far more progressive and radical than he. And last night, in his, I don't know if you saw his address to his supporters, he actually, for the first time, mentioned, rather formally, his opposition to what he called perpetual war. He's never said that before. That said, it seems to me that the presidential debates have offered little beyond a steady flow of right-wing talking points. And military escalation in Europe, with its fearsome prospects for nuclear warfare, now that we're modernizing our nuclear arsenal, $10 trillion worth, the prospects for nuclear warfare has been obscured in a maze of silly candidate attacks and counterattacks, which we can, of course, expect to continue, because that's what elections are about. They're not about issues. And so the question that I want to end with, a couple of questions, is could sharpening conflict between the United States and NATO and Russia prefigure widening military conflict that might veer hopelessly out of control? Could arms control efforts now be defunct? And what are the possible consequences of full-scale U.S. nuclear modernization possibly matched by Russia? And could the Ukrainian crisis be a pretext for more ambitious U.S.-NATO moves? So I think we have to stay tuned, but for the moment, I don't think we should anticipate anything beyond a few commonplace anti-Russian platitudes. As for later, watch out.
Thanks a lot for your call today.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Glenn, you're on the air. Where are you calling from, Glenn?
Don't increase this J.
This is J. Okay.
Okay, two things. Number one, I just saw a story where it says that the Republican Party may revolt against Donald Trump. I'm starting to think that the man is cracking up, and he's deliberately trying to sabotage this election so that his good friend, Hillary Clinton, can get into office.
Why do you think he's cracking up? What is the indication that you're getting that he's cracking up? Many people would say it's exactly the opposite. He is getting more and more in tune with that so-called constituency out there that likes what he's saying.
Yeah, but it's just his behavior and the way that he's talking. It just doesn't seem to me that someone who supposedly has his intellect and breeding would behave in such a Neanderthal manner. I mean, remember, they always talk about him being a great businessman, a great negotiator, great this and great that. You know, a person that has those type of skills, Sister Utrecht, do not behave in the manner that he behaves. Now, the question becomes, if you say that he's doing this for his constituency, I would ask you this. If he continues to behave like this, if there are enough American people in this country who agree with him that will be able to put him in office, are the numbers there? Because that's what it really is going to boil down to, is the vote. Now, with his behavior and the manner in which he's acting, he's scaring more minorities than anything to vote. So, you know, I'm just wondering, the numbers for white people who agree with him in this country and the few minorities that also agree with him in this country to put him in office, numbers-wise. Could you answer that for me, sis?
I'm glad you asked all these really easy-to-answer questions. Here's the thing. Donald Trump had been, from the very beginning, vastly underestimated. People thought of him as a kind of caricature, even of himself. But Donald Trump is and has been very much in tune with this latent racist view and culture in the United States. And he has capitalized on it. And people are still wondering, how come? Because this is what has always been there. This is what has fueled the country for years. And finally, comes along a person who is not afraid to articulate what people have been saying for years, for decades, in private, quietly. There is no apology about it anymore. Why? Because there is power and authority behind the racism. And people are understanding that. And what Donald Trump has been able to do is galvanize it, give it a shape, give it authority. It doesn't matter how embarrassed the Republican establishment is about the openness and the unapologetic nature of his racism. Because, frankly, they actually identify with it. They just don't like it being so crude. They'd like it a little bit dressed up. Because they see themselves as being old-style, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant leaders, the old Republican Party. Racist, just like the Democratic Party, absolutely, trenchantly racist. But in their own ways, the Republican and Democratic parties are playing an unapologetic race game all the way. Hillary Clinton is just totally out there with it. And they know that that's what is at that's the bedrock of U.S. society. Trump appealing to the base instincts of whites and using people of color to reinforce that. And Clinton, the classic liberal racist. Her political fortunes lie with the very people she despises. But they're necessary because, after all, they created a political life, a political reality, a political possibility, a political opportunity to exist as political entities. So she's, even though she clearly is condescending and patronizing toward these communities, she nonetheless needs them. She needs them. And they are responding appropriately. They're properly conditioned. So the Democratic Party is existing because it has carefully cultivated a political plantation. And its residents have not veered far off. They remain docile. They remain amenable. They remain pliable. They remain gullible, they remain loyal, even to the point of self-annihilation. So they've done a good job. But either way, on both sides, it's trenchant racism we're seeing here masquerading as politics. And that's how I would answer your question.
Well, I have to totally agree with everything that you say, even though you didn't say if the numbers fit the case for a win. But listen, when it's all said and done, hopefully people will wake up and see both of these individuals for who they are, because, you know, if Hillary Clinton gets in office, black people are going to get the same or maybe worse treatment than they got when Obama was in office. And unfortunately, we were quite happy with that type of treatment for the last 8 years. So, you know, all we can
Trump singled out Mexicans because, hey, they have no political protection. But long ago, we got indications from Bill Clinton. He literally interrupted his political campaign to execute a black man. You remember that? To make a point.
Of course I remember that.
Okay.
That's like one of the memories in regards to my old lady's birthday. I can't forget that day. You know how much trouble it caused me. But the reality is this. We hopefully will wake up and find a way to survive what's coming ahead. Just listening to Gary's show that just went off the air, there's so much that we as a people have to figure out and deal with if we're going to survive, that maybe, you know, Ms. Clinton and Trump may not really be the issue that we need to focus if we want to just survive here in these United States. Have a good day. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your call, Jay. Good to hear from you. Marie, you're on the air.
I'm so happy to be on your show again.
Thank you.
And
thank you, Marie. Where are you calling from?
Excellent show yesterday. I want to bring up the Freddie Gray case here in Baltimore, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Well, I can tell you this. People are feeling that the police officers in this case are not going to be convicted. And last year, I don't know if you heard this, I heard this, that Freddie's mother tried to commit suicide in October. And another thing about this case, the family and I guess the lawyer was given money. They won an award, or whatever you want to call it, early in this year. And some people are saying they never heard of a case being awarded before the case is over. And another thing about this case now, some people are saying that perhaps the bench trial, where you have one officer at a time being given the judge, I mean the sentence by the judge. And now I heard some people are saying that maybe they should have all of the officers being tried at one time, that other facts would be coming out. And then last Saturday in the newspaper here, the medical examiner said that Freddie was murdered. And then recently they were saying before, I think the same medical examiner stated that it was an accident. Do you see what's going on here?
Well, in fact, here's the question. I pose a question to you.
Oh, my
God. What do you see as a resident of Baltimore? What do you see is going on there?
Well, I see a very outright racism going on, where it was obvious that the white police officer or officers who ran after Freddie and understand that Freddie was in good medical condition, and then he gets a broken neck or whatever they call that before he's even put in the wagon. And they're accusing the driver, even going back last year, that he was responsible because he was driving erratically. However, they got a witness in the van who was another convict or something, and the convict stated that he told a lie last year or early this year about Freddie's condition. And the thing that people are concerned about, I believe, and myself, that if this case comes out where all the officers are not convicted, there may be another riot, because the people here, I hear on the radios, they are hot about this case.
Well, of course they're hot about it, because people can clearly see that in so many ways it is not going according to form.
Mm-hmm.
There are too many irregularities here,
yeah,
and too many irregularities consistent with the kinds of irregularities that the communities like of Baltimore and other communities across the country, you've seen this happen time and again. We've had an analysis, and we will continue to return to this case, even though the case against Porter is about to wrap up, Porter being the driver of the van.
No, Porter was the officer, and Goodson was the driver.
Goodson, I'm sorry. Caesar Goodson. We're looking at a history of how these cases go. Alton Maddox has been with us predicting literally 100% of the outcome of this and other major cases involving police, killings of civilians, and brutality of civilians, in which the prosecutorial system takes a predictable path. The outcome, therefore, also is predictable. And yet, people have been extremely, even though you said, people are going to be, they've had enough, and there may be riots and so forth. But the fact is, I look at it the other way. I'm amazed that people across this country who have witnessed these kinds of irregularities, these prosecutorial irregularities in the ways these cases are tried, have been so self-contained. They have been extremely patient, even with the outcomes that we can predict. And we're seeing it happen. I mean, the medical examiner this past week, you're right, he testified that there is no way that Freddie Gray's injuries were accidental.
Yes.
Or that he just, by some bizarre fluke, managed to snap his own neck and break his own spine. He said this. This is an experienced individual. And still we will have the community forced to accept the irregularities, even with an African-American prosecutor. We have bench trials for police officers implicated in the murders of on murder charges, okay? You get a bench trial because what? You're a police officer. So you could get an exemption. You don't have to be tried by a jury of your peers. In New York City, we see time and again the exemptions being made. Police officers who get 24 hours before anybody could question them. So you have a kind of consistency here. And people are trying to fool us into thinking, well, this is justice being done. And you have an African-American female prosecutor. Yes, you have 6 cops, 3 whites and 3 blacks. We finally have achieved, apparently, parity in police brutality. And so people are supposed to trust that the system is doing its job, when in so many ways the system has indicated it is not doing its job. It's not prepared to do its job. It's not interested in doing the job. So I go back to you, and I ask you, Marie, what, apart from what you have said so far, what to you is the most significant thing about this case?
Well, you may disagree with me, I don't know. I just see it as white privilege is always right. That's the way I look at it, because race is involved in this case. If this was turned around to be a white individual being put in a van, he would not have a broken neck before he gets in the van. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
No, he would not have had a broken neck. And so racism involved in this case, and as long as we're going to keep having racial problems in this country, we're going to have continuous riots, because the younger people just can't take no more of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, what do they have to lose? They may not have to, they may lose a home, or maybe they won't have a home. But, you know, that's all I can say at this time. I don't want a riot, but the system makes people riot. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do, very much so.
And
I certainly understand what you're saying.
I'm going to let you go so others can call, but I think this case is going to be quite something. I don't know about other cases around this country, but it's a great concern here in Baltimore right now.
No question.
Thank you so much, dear.
And thank you for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us today.
Surely.
E, we have someone named E. You're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Okay. Now, where are you calling from?
Sorry, I had my speakerphone on. Could you ask me the question again?
Where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from Edgewater, Florida. It's about 20 miles south of Daytona.
Yes, I know where it is.
Okay. I was just saying that for other people maybe from that didn't know where Edgewater would be. So, So how are you today?
Fine, thank you for asking. What is on your mind that you will free up today?
I have so much on my mind, I probably couldn't free it all up in this call, but I just want to try to get a few things out. First of all, with this election, I think it's a stage play going on, orchestrated by Hillary and the both parties. I think we have a one-party system disguised as a two-party system. We used to have a four-party system. We had a conservative party, a liberal party. They're gone. We just have Democrat and Republican. They work together in cahoots since Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy was all murdered, and then the Nixon debacle with the reporters getting in and finding out all these things with the Watergate and they had to impeach it. I think since then they've been just putting who they want in there when the climate is right for this one or that one. When they need to have a Republican in there, they put the Republican in. When they need to have a Democrat, they put the Democrat in. We need to vote because we fought for our rights to vote. Many people fought for their rights to vote. So they have to make it look like we at least have a choice of two parties. They play good cop, bad cop with us, with the Republicans. When they want a Republican there, that'll be the good cop, and the Democrats will be the bad cop. The other way around, when they want to have the Democrat in there. I think we're here for having Hillary in there. You're telling me this great Democratic Party can only put two people up there to run for president now? A guy who's been in there for 36 years now decides to run for president now that he's 75 years old? Has a Jewish man ever been elected president before?
Not that I know.
No. One Catholic, Kennedy and Obama, have been the only different presidents besides all the WASPs. They've all been WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Since George Washington, whatever they say, there was presidents before that I heard, but I don't know about it. I don't want to lose my foot here. So the way it comes down is Hillary needs to get all the Democratic votes on her side. But she knows half of them don't like her. They wouldn't go vote for her. So she needs to get somebody to run with her. Has there ever been a woman president before?
Well, no.
Has there ever been a woman vice president before?
No.
There hasn't been a woman president or vice president, so this would be a first. There hasn't been a Jewish president, so this would be a first. They're putting two people to run for the great presidency here on the Democratic Party that they just had for 8 years with Obama. When Obama ran last time, how many people were in the primary with him and Hillary?
Oh, I don't know the number of other candidates offhand. I'll have to look that
right
up.
I think basically it was just him and Hillary. But I could understand just having two of them because you had the incumbent, Obama, and then you had Hillary trying to beat him out. I think he has been appointed the president for the last 8 years, so they can blame everything on the black man. And black people have had more problems in these last 8 years since he's been put in there. So they can say, it's your fault. You voted for him. You put this guy in there. Now deal with it. And that's the way black people have been looking at it, I think, because they counted on him to be the great black hope, and he hasn't done anything for black people. So now he can't run again because he did his eight years. And now it's Hillary's turn. This has all been planned out for 10 years. She just needs a guy like Bernie Sanders from Brooklyn, Donald Trump from Brooklyn. They're all friends. Donald Trump's a friend. They go to their children's weddings together. He donates money to them. They're friends. This is all a scam. They're putting this all on for our fun. They're laughing at us. We're idiots. Gary Noel's show just came on before talking about all these jobs we're going to lose. And Gary says, what's going to happen to all the people? They're killing us. We already know they plan to eliminate 4 billion of us. All right, back to the election. She needs to have one person running with her so she doesn't lose the other half of the votes that she can't get because they don't like her. She knows what she can get. The woman vote, the black vote, for some reason they're hypnotized by this Democratic Party, so they'll vote for this idiot. And, oh, man. and she gets the minority. So what does she have, about 40% of the Democratic votes there? She needs to have the other half, and she can't have them leave and vote for somebody else and go to another party. So she needs to have a guy, Bernie Sanders, come in, and he's the only candidate that talked about free health care and free education. The 16 people on the Republican side never talked about it. Trump said he'd change Obamacare, but it probably would make it worse anyway. Hillary says, keep it. Why change something that's working good? Because it was her health care plan in the first place when Bill Clinton was president. She came up with a 1,300-page report on this health care plan, but they slashed it right away because they wanted to wait for Obama to get in there so they could blame it on him for messing up the health care and everybody's mad about, that their rates have gone double and quadrupled. That was her plan. He just adopted her plan and put it through. So she doesn't want to change it because she's happy her plan's in there now. She needs
so,
to get
let
Bernie
me ask
Sanders.
But E, you have outlined a number of things that you say lead you to believe that this is actually a one-party system. In light
right.
of that, what are you doing? What is your political situation? What is your political position in an election year?
Well, when I was 10, when I saw Kennedy assassinated, and the whole thing was bungled, and it all looked so impossible, I haven't had any faith in any political system since then, when I've seen all these people being murdered. So I don't pay much attention to it, but it bothers me that people think that this is happening and this is happening in real time, and it's all just a stage play that's set up, and I don't pay any attention to it. Trying to, like, just explain how it's possible that this is really happening, and by showing you these things, Bernie Sanders, any candidate that says they're going to have free college and free health care is going to get a lot of support, wouldn't they?
Well, it appears that was his calculation, and it appears that it had been working. It's something
by
that
design,
generated a great
design.
Deal of interest.
Mm-hmm. Out of all the candidates, he's the only one who says that. He can promise anything. He knows he's not in it to win it. He's just in it to gather up these votes into his pen, so when Hillary has her votes in her pen, then they have to figure out how to get the votes from his pen over to her. The people that don't like her, that wouldn't vote for her, are now going to be forced to vote for her because Bernie's going to tell them to vote for her, and he'll probably be her running mate, and then they'll say, at least we'll have him as a vice president if something happens with Hillary's phone. Remember the first debate? Who voluntarily said, let's forget about the phone problem, and it's, oh, Bernie, that's so nice of you. I think we should just forget about all this phone business.
The email issue.
On to important issues, right? Doesn't that tell you that they squashed that right away? We're not going to talk about Hillary's emails and all those things. Nobody's talking about it.
All these observations, nonetheless, have led you to the conclusion that you're not participating in this. You're out of it.
Right. I don't think they count votes anymore. They let us go to the poll and make a selection, so we think we're voting, but there's only a two-party system disguised as a two-party system. It's just one that's the combination of a dictatorship and a monarchy. And we're being twisted and turned and twisted all around, and we don't know what's going on here. Things are happening that
I agree.
If you bring down the World Trade Center, and it was an inside job, and they got away with it. If they can do that, they can do anything.
I thank you for offering your thoughts today. Much to think about, and I thank you for offering them. Thank you so much for your call today. And that brings us to the end of our program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. Always something to learn from Dr. Jack Rasmus. You can reach me at Lead Stories, LEIDstories@gmail.com. It is, in fact, the weekend, so you would want to be in the company of people who bring positive dimension to your life. and you would want to avoid all others. So I want to thank you for joining me today. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.